the Hoops Tempo Podcast, Kings Edition. We are 6 games into the season. The Kings stand at 2-4. They just dropped 2 miserable losses to Houston, including yesterday, at least in terms of when this is being recorded. A game they lost by 25, but the score was not as close as it indicates. At one point, the score is 67-107. All hope was lost by basically the third quarter. Jack, how are you feeling?
That was a tough one to stomach. I didn't even watch the last 3 minutes. I couldn't handle it. It was a hard, hard watch, both games.
That's funny you missed the last 3 minutes, because that was probably our best basketball, was the garbage time points. Keon Ellis led the team in scoring with 15 points. That tells you something when your garbage time players are leading your team in scoring. But I want to touch on the positive, because we were at one point a pretty good team, and that was when De'Aaron Fox was healthy. That's when he was playing well. And honestly, this stretch kind of tells you that Fox has been a top 15 player in the entire league.
I mean, undoubtedly, the 3 games before his injury, we're looking at 31 points a game, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, great efficiency by De'Aaron Fox standards. His value to this team has never been higher. In terms of value to their respective NBA franchise, De'Aaron might be like top 5 in the league, because this team is so bad without him. I started looking up like, geez, like, are the prospects good this year? We're talking about whether we had our draft pick. De'Aaron is so good.
That is a really low point, because I didn't check Tankathon at all last year, except for like strength of schedule. I was looking at it last night. I was checking like, man, the 5th best odds, like, I guess we'll take that.
I was starting to talk myself into like Matis Bazilis. So I was like, oh man, he'd be good.
Maybe. It's not looking good for like the Sabonis agenda. But on Fox, you mentioned the 30 points. He was carrying like crazy. And honestly, like maybe the difference between us getting blown out and us being right there in that game, even winning that game, is someone like Fox. Scores 30 a night. No one can stay in front of him, can facilitate well, try us hard on defense, because that just makes everything so much easier, especially given his backup in Davion Mitchell is probably the worst offensive point guard in the entire league. But I wanted to mention, with De'Aaron Fox, this season, when he's on the court, the Kings have been in the 98th percentile in terms of points scored per 100 possessions. That's really good. And defensively, the 81st percentile when he's on the court. So they've been basically a top 10 team on offense and defense with him. And that's what we were seeing. And without him, it just kind of fell apart. Because I'll ask you this question. Offensively, points scored per 100 possessions, what percentile does Davion Mitchell land in when he's on the court? When he's not as an individual, but him helping the team.
I thought I saw this on Twitter this morning. It's really bad.
It's low.
It's one of the worst in the NBA.
Take a swing. Yeah. You have 100. There's 100 options.
6?
Lower.
2?
Lower.
1?
It's lower than that. It's 0. It's the 0th percentile. Now, I don't know for sure if it's 0.9 or like literally dead last, right. Like actually 0. But either way, you're looking at just essentially the best offense in the league, or one of the best, 98th percentile with Fox to 0th percentile with Davion. So that's kind of the difference. Does that make you feel any better? We play Portland next. If we're 3-4, Fox comes back and it's just a mini 2-game slide. We still have Fox on the roster, right? I mean, he's not gone forever. It's just an ankle sprain. Are we going to be okay?
Against Portland, I would hope that we're going to be fine. But if we've learned anything from the Rockets game, I think we might want to try using Colby Jones and Jordan Ford a little bit more, because we really need someone to handle the ball that's actually competent in terms of scoring. Maybe it's moving Malik to like a more point guard role for a game. I don't know what it is, but we can't have Davion Mitchell running an offense and expect to win games.
Are we done with the positives? Is there anything else before we just rip this team bit by bit?
Yeah. We talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but Colby Jones and Keon Ellis playing very, very well in the first couple games. That's always great. But again, these are our 13th and 14th guy, respectfully.
I think they should get a little more run, but I still like Mike Brown. When I'm watching the game, I'm not upset about the rotations or when the timeouts are called. I still feel like what I like as a coach is being demonstrated with Mike Brown currently. His leadership and the way he's continued to mentor these guys is still good. I think it's Fox, it's Mike Brown. The rest of this team has huge, huge issues. I did my power rankings yesterday, my possible chairs power rankings, which is just Ooh, crisp name. I had the Kings 21st. Do you feel? How do you feel about that?
Jeez, that's so low.
It's low, but I just maybe I shouldn't have up. Well, I wanted to do it last night, and I watched the game, and then went that. That was next on the slate. I just couldn't convince myself like that we're better than like Orlando or the Pelicans, Cleveland, like. Well,
yeah.
How could we do those two games, and then how could I say that we're better than Houston, right?
I mean, the way to talk about it is just think about what any pick a team in the league, a good team, the Nuggets, the Celtics, whoever, take away their number one guy, the guy who their offense, their entire team is built around. They're also not going to be great. Obviously, they're not going to be quite this bad, but you take Stephen Curry off the Warriors team, that's a horrible team.
Maybe that's a bottom too harsh. Five times. I had to juggle not liking Houston and the fact that they just destroyed us by
what's the gripe with Houston? Is it just Dylan Brooks?
No, I just don't. They're too young. I still think they're gonna land about 30 something game, like 35 wins. But I saw the Van Fleet signing kind of paying off for them in that game. He facilitates really well, drives really well. Let's talk about Sabonis. Now, you'd hope your all NBA, almost like kind of fringe MVP talk, who's seventh last year in MVP voting.
Yeah, would be able seventh to, in voting last year.
Would be able to step up offensively in Fox's absence. He took 10 shots in the first game against Houston, and I made a video saying, like, he's got to shoot the ball more. I don't know what's going on. And he backs that one up with a 4-shot performance. Why isn't Sabonis shooting the fucking ball, Jack? What's he waiting for?
He doesn't get good looks without De'Aaron Fox on the court. It's really crazy how much his looks vary just depending on whether Fox is on the court with him, because without Fox and a total non-threat on offense with Davion Mitchell at the top of the key and Kevin Huerter, who has been spotty, and then Harrison Barnes, who has also been spotty, the whole defense is collapsing around Sabonis. And as you know, once he's outside of like that 8 to 16 foot range, he's screwed. The defense just collapsed all over him. He had nothing that was wide open.
You have to shoot the ball to keep your facilitating to keep your facilitation dangerous. Like, you can't be a pass first big and never score, because then the defense just kind of sags off. Like against Houston, usually last season he was 18 points per game, super efficient, a really good player in the post because he was dangerous to score. Sometimes he was like, at the last second, he's doubled down there and he was able to kick it out really well. The Rockets were just not doing that. They just had Şengün on him one-on-one. And when you don't send that double and there's no threat to score, the rest of the offense gums up. Here's something. Davion Mitchell, I said, was the 0th percentile for points scored per 100 possessions in terms of how he impacts a team. But Domantas Sabonis, the 1st percentile. He's right there with him. The defensive number has actually been pretty good. And I actually think he has been kind of good on defense this year, 66%.
He has. That's the worst part about all of these slow starts, is that Sabonis and Huerter have looked fucking great on defense this whole time. Like, I've been sitting there watching Kevin Huerter play defense, better defense he's ever played in his career, but just can't shoot. What? is that the sacrifice we have to make in order to get you to play wing defense, is for you to just never score?
Maybe. I mean, part of me wonders, like, did we stop practicing offense at some point in the off season, and like we just were cold right now, the guys are getting used to scoring the ball at a high level, because Sabonis has been switching on the perimeter much better, his rim protection numbers are good, the eye test is passed, and like I don't think he is like never going to win a title with Sabonis at center because of his defense anymore. And that really came from like the Warriors series first round, where I figured he would just get pick and roll to death, and he really didn't, and he carried that into this opening of the season. Dude can't score anymore. He's like 14 points and 5 assists, and that's just not nearly special enough.
Yeah, it's not even close to enough, and you're playing him for most of the game. He is the hub of your offense. He can be fine on defense. He can improve on defense all he wants, but his issues are still going to remain if his scoring output is still like a fifth option. You can't have a guy who's going to play 40 minutes a game, be the hub of the offense, and score 8 points. You're never going to get anywhere with that.
You really can't. But it's just such a good point about Fox being out and how that would affect any other team if they are missing their best player. And maybe we shouldn't be so harsh, because I just really...
I mean, you can look at the Grizzlies right now.
Yeah, no, that's true. And with the West being so tough and just the NBA being so good, you really can't just have your best player miss time. Like you're gonna be playing pretty sub 500 basketball. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Sabonis?
Oof, so I'm the biggest Sabonis defender because he gets so much abuse across the league. It's really hard to see him not be aggressive. Aggressive Sabonis wins us games. I don't know what is up with the entire team right now with just lacking that aggression outside of De'Aaron. No one seemed to want to score, least of all Sabonis.
They just hammered us. This is really just about the Houston series. Looking at basically the entirety of their lineup, they were bigger, faster, stronger, more athletic at every position. We were just outmatched purely. Like the Şengün would get the ball and do little half hooks and spins, and he'd take jumpers, pump fake three pointers that worked. Like he doesn't even really shoot threes, and he was drawing so much attention to the perimeter. And Sabonis has,
man, we could have used Trey Lyles.
Yeah, we could have used Lyles and Fox.
Just a physical body in there.
When Sabonis has the ball, he just is just no threat to shoot it or even. Mm-hmm. Or even take hooks off with his right hand, and so it just isn't as dangerous as it used to be. Is Fox playing against Portland?
It's not confirmed. He's supposed to be able to. I think it's going to be like a questionable distinction, but in theory, he was almost good to go for last night. But you know, we were just playing cautious, which is the right thing to do at this point of the year, and it was right to assume that maybe we'd have an easier time against the Rockets, which we clearly did not. Ah, God.
No, we didn't. Let's move on from Sabonis and just continue the roast of this slow start. Keegan Murray, 36% shooting, 26% from three. Ice cold. And I'm not so concerned because everything still looks the same. He's still playing pretty good defense. He's still involved in plays. He's getting the same looks. They just aren't falling. I think that's a slump. Do you have any other Keegan thoughts?
I'm not too worried about Keegan. I'm a little disappointed. I think I'm not worried about his percentages and his shooting because, again, he's proven. At some level, he's proven. It'll come back. It's a regression, or I guess progression to the mean. But what I am worried about with him is I don't see the aggression and the desire to be the number one option that we saw in summer and in preseason. There was an aggressive Keegan Murray that we saw all offseason, dropping 40 points in games, being the main ball handler. We just haven't seen that in a regular season game so far.
If anyone can get that going, it is Mike Brown. And so I feel comfortable with that, just grilling Keegan to take these shots. And honestly, I think he did already. I think they already did that. They already had that speech. And so I think the lack of efficiency is a result of maybe biting off a little more than he can chew. Maybe they were a little too eager to get him rolling with 18 shots a night to start, and he just wasn't quite ready. He's currently taking 13 and a half shots, which is the second most on the entire Kings.
But that's probably right, right? Like he probably should be getting the second most shots.
I think so. I think he's just getting used to that. I think he's getting used to that. We mentioned Herter shooting just a blistering 24% from three, 32% Stun. From the field, and 60% from the line. But his defense all of a sudden is like, okay, it's pretty, like, after being a horrible defender,
it's better
last
than
year,
okay. He's actually just a very solid point of attack defender, which is awesome if he could shoot.
Like, if only Kevin Herter could shoot.
Why can't you do both at once, dude? I can't believe that right now that's the part of Kevin Herter's game I'm questioning. It's insane. I don't understand why we go through waves of this where you can either play offense or you can either play defense. And honestly, I could give less than a crap if we are the worst defensive team in the NBA. Because that's not why this team won't win based on good defense. We just don't have the personnel to do it. We're going to win by being awesome at offense. We just don't have the personnel to have a great defense.
You got
to
build on your strengths. I feel like with what we're doing right now, maybe they were too concerned with getting the defense to like league average, because a league average defense and like a league average offense is an average team. But if you have one great strength, you can win games. I did want to note some lineup stuff. We've had two lineups play over 100 possessions this season. De'Aaron Fox, Herter, Keegan Murray, Harrison Barnes, Sabonis, and then the same lineup except for Flip Fox with Mitchell. Now, the differential per 100 possessions in for the Fox lineup is +16.4, which is really good. 84th percentile.
Really great. Yeah.
That same lineup, flipping Davion for Fox, is -17.6, 23rd percentile. It's not the worst in the league, but it's really bad for it's the lineup we've used the most so far this season. Where is your Davion Mitchell stock? Because I warned you to sell it in the offseason.
My Davion Mitchell stock is at an all-time low. I want to see more Jones and Ford. I'm kind of done with seeing him play over 25 minutes. I think at this point, he's still a very good defender. I'll give him that. He's still a very good guard defender. I'm probably more okay with him getting spot minutes to take on like a Luka Doncic or someone like that.
I think he should be a fun utility guy occasionally, but the thing is, like, how good are you on defense when you're 6 foot? You can disrupt offensively. He chased Steph around last year. Steph demolished us. Steph destroyed us. He had a 50-point game 7. Like, let's not pretend like he affected him. He was there and he chased him around, and that's hard. But it just no matter how good defensively you are, you're not gonna be super impactful if you're not a huge wing or a huge center. Like, you just can't be that impactful.
Speaking of people that are probably playing too many minutes than they should be, Aaron, how much of Harrison Barnes's legacy was saved by that opening game? Because he is averaging 31 minutes a game and has been horrible.
He's been hilariously bad. That initial game was all he had left in the tank. Since then, I think I sent you the averages. It's like 9 points and 2 rebounds. Jack, he's 6'8 or 6'9 with a 7-foot wingspan. What's going on out there? Like, he's averaging 2 rebounds per game and
points. He just runs. He doesn't do anything. He runs, and not fast. He runs slow.
Do you know how many total blocks he has this season?
Probably zero. I don't think he's gotten a single block. Has he gotten one?
He's gotten one. Oh my God. He has one block.
This is a joke.
Okay, to his point, or to his defense, he's shooting 46% from three, which is very, very good. He's the only king, except for like Malik Monk, who actually can hit threes right now. It feels like our players are having all of the opposite problems that we anticipated. We thought Herter would be a deadeye, but he can't defend. It's the opposite. We thought Sabonis would be this offensive hub, but he can't defend. But that's the opposite. We thought Barnes would be our kind of glue defensive guy, but he struggles on offense, and he is shooting the lights out of the ball and doing literally nothing else.
Okay, true, but Barnes is shooting the lights out of the ball sometimes. Because in half of the games, he's gone like 0-4.
Was it that one Jazz game that's just carrying his...
Yeah. There's a Jazz game where he shot 5-7 and the Warriors game where he shot 4-8. And,
you know, yeah. For positives, I really should have mentioned, I meant to write that down, but JaVale McGee's been really good. I like JaVale McGee.
Yeah. Okay, JaVale McGee is a positive. I do need him to stop fouling people. That would be a great thing. But besides his foul issues, he's actually been really fucking good. Yeah. Way better than I thought.
Here's a number. The De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, Chris Duarte, Vezenkov, McGee had 45 possessions. That's the third most on the Kings so far, +35.4.
Yeah,
that's,
I really like that lineup.
Blowout. They are destroying those guys. There's great shooting, and honestly, like, watching McGee, like watching Sabonis and Monk do a pick and roll, I wish it was Monk and McGee. Like, when it happens.
Actually, I'm fully redacting my statement. I was just clouded with my judgment about McGee's foul issues from last game, where he had 4 in like 5 minutes.
He hasn't been fouling?
No, other than last night's game, he's had one foul all year.
Hey, man, I guess a little recency bias effect. I guess he's been great. Looking at some of the off-on stuff, I mean, he's +52 in 74 minutes. That's not +52, sorry. +24.6, which is really good. Where, like, Sabonis is -20.3. I mean, basically every game we've had, Sabonis is plus-minus is negative, and McGee's plus-minus is positive. And it feels that way. It feels like the Monk-McGee pick and rolls are really hard to guard, because McGee is still at his age so athletic and has great hands and tries really hard and stretches the defense vertically in a way Sabonis never does.
I wish his shot blocking was a little bit better, I guess, is the only thing I would love from McGee, because I think there's some, I kind of like the idea of playing another big man next to Sabonis. I'm some still really in love with that, because I remember the Miles Turner minutes from Indiana, and I'd love for McGee to be that guy, but he's been incredible. I couldn't have asked for this. I didn't even expect this. There was part of me that didn't expect him to make the roster.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, though, is looking at that lineup, Fox, Monk, Duarte, Vezenkov, McGee, plus 35.4. The lineup of Monk, Kobe Jones, Keegan Murray, Vezenkov, and Sabonis, which seems fine, is minus 56.3. Which is, it's just insanity how bad that group has worked together in the few possessions they've had. Basically, every lineup with Sabonis' name attached to it is getting blown out, which is really hard to see.
Yeah. It's really hard to look at stats like that and not think about, you know, the obvious here, which Ooh. Is moving it. But
moving on.
I know, I really don't. I feel like that's such a taboo.
Wouldn't that be the best day of our lives, Jack? Because we can stop defending him. We were free. Like the Halliburton trade sucked. It was stupid. Oh, I had never liked him. He fouls too much. And he can't shoot.
Just a complete 180 on all the last year of social media activity.
Who would want him? I'm not saying he definitely is of positive value. He's not Julius Randle or James Harden.
Yeah, he's really good.
And his contract is pretty good. And so, here's what I think is coming, and what we talked about: the OG and Anobi overpay, like Barnes and okay. But would you do Barnes in the three first? Barnes and Day. I haven't done the contracts. Let me take a look. We do some on air.
Yeah, what's OG making? But isn't OG like an 18 million a year guy?
I honestly it might match up perfectly with Barnes.
Because if it's 18 a million, then that's exactly Barnes, or alternatively, that's Herter plus Davion. If he's in that like low 20 range.
Herter might be interesting for them.
Yeah. I would actually probably, as much as I would prefer for that trade to include Barnes, they would probably want her.
I'm fine with that. That's fine. OG is 18 million. We'll go
18. Fucking
nice job. Yeah. We'll have a Herter and Davion.
Herter's at 16. Davion's like at what, 7, 8?
5. Let's see if this works.
5.
That does work. That works. So we give up Herter, Davion, and basically 3 firsts.
I doubt we'd have to give up 3 if you were giving up Herter and Davion.
What's Davion?
Maybe 2? Well, Davion's filler, but he's a flyer.
I was thinking 3, but it's like 1. It's like 2029, 20, top 7 protected. Maybe
you're protected.
Two of those are unprotected. One is heavily protected. I mean, you got to trade OG at some point, right? The Raptors have been...
They've got to trade him at some point.
The thing is, the Raptors have been pretty good this year. But like, how can you play Scottie Barnes more? Like anyone that's in the way of Scottie Barnes, should probably go.
So I mean, in that vein, do you think they would toss on like an Otto Porter or someone, just get a wing defender?
Maybe.
They're not playing it. We'd use them. We'd play Otto Porter, right?
Maybe. I kind of want to consolidate a little bit, just because I like Keon Ellis and I like Kobe Jones.
I hear you on that, I guess. I do love Colby. I'm probably not quite as sold on
OG's just because I haven't watched him enough. Crazy. Like, they're just, when he's playing, the Raptors are destroying people. Maybe they're not even interested. But at the same time, if you're Toronto, you have Scottie Barnes, you're not winning the title this year, why not take three Sacramento Kings first? We're both Kings fans. That's like the most valuable thing on earth. There's no other team you'd want first round picks from.
Undoubtedly. I mean, just the name attached in any context. Holy shit, a Kings pick? Those guys suck.
And then all of a sudden you have a crazy active wing defender. I think I'm into the big moves, and it makes you rethink offseason a little bit, just in terms of why did we re-sign Harrison Barnes?
Does it make you think making a big, does it make you rethink about potentially making a big move on the deadline?
I didn't want anything. We had the podcast with Yoko Showstar, and I said I just want to keep this together. But I'm guessing with Fox coming back, we're gonna be fine. We're not gonna be the 3 seed that we were last year. But maybe we'll end up basically right where everyone thought we were going to be, which is like 44 or 45 wins once Fox returns and we finish the season out. Because you freak out in the early season. It's a really long season. We're going to be doing this for another 4 months.
It is, and part of me isn't so panicked because we started 4-0-4 last year.
Yeah, it was much worse last year.
We looked much worse than this to start the year last year.
Well, we had no idea who we were. At least we're like kind of come to this identity where it's 2-3, right? 2-4. You're 2-4? 2-4. We can fix that. Although I want to mention on the Jokic Showstar podcast, State of the League, you mentioned a Bulls fire sale, and that looks like that's gonna happen.
The Bulls fire sale is 100% gonna happen, and there's a lot of pieces on that team that I'd love to have in Sacramento. Caruso is probably my number one.
Patrick Williams.
Pat, really?
You don't want
him? He's good, but they're gonna want a lot for him.
He's not starting. They benched him for
I understand that he's not that, but they think he's that.
If there's one front office to hold on to like a aging, expensive, not good core, it's the Bulls front office. They're about 3 years late on everything. But I was talking to some friends of mine. I mentioned I don't know if the Bulls have to blow it up to tank. Like, they might just be bad enough as is. Like, they don't have to sell. They could just be bad. The Vooch trade, I'm sure DeMar is going to want out. I mean, LaVine's unhappy, but who wants those guys? Like, their role players are much more interesting. Javon Carter,
Carter and Caruso.
Well, no,
he doesn't fit a timeline.
He was free agent, though. Can we even sign him? Like, or can he be traded? Like,
by the deadline, it'll be 60 days.
Gotcha.
So it'll be fine. But does LaVine intrigue you at all and just go all in on offense?
Whoa. You know, there's a timeline of this.
Where he was already on the Kings.
All that time ago. And we offered him all that money after the ACL surgery, and people like bashed on us. And then the Bulls signed him. And I remember all like the comments of that post were like, Bulls are saving the Kings from themselves. Like, thank God the Bulls stepped in, and LaVine ended up being pretty good. What are we offering for Zach LaVine? And
what's Zach LaVine's trade value like, though? Because like,
let me see what like other people are cooking up in the trade machine. Although I've noticed those are pretty bad. Like, usually,
the general public trade machine is you're really looking for good takes here.
It's got to be
Zach LaVine this year is averaging 22 points a game with 2 assists, 4 rebounds on 41 from the field, 32 from 3. That's not great, but last year and for the last 4 seasons prior, he's been an above 38% shooter from 3, an above 45% shooter from the field, above 20 points a game every year. He's a great scorer. He just doesn't offer a lot else.
Trying to find I don't think anyone has a Kings, and no one else had made a Kings Bulls pick, but I mean, these are like disgusting 5-teamers. I'm like, what? I also love that all the trades, because it's like a forum on the Fanspo trade machine, they're all just downvoted. They're all in the negatives. Like, no one likes them.
The other issue with LaVine, and why I will never be able to convince myself that he'll be good for this team, is he low-key has maybe one of the worst contracts in the league.
I just don't see the fit for us. Like, I mean,
he's making $50 million until 2027. Did you know that?
No. All right. Never mind. Let's back out of that. With that being said, is LaVine going to get traded at all?
Probably not
then.
That's a huge deal.
That's a huge contract.
No one can afford that. And no one can afford that at all. The last year of his deal is a player option at $48 million.
Good God. He's going to walk into that. I wanted to submit my official request for Keon Ellis or Kobe Jones to play over Davion Mitchell.
I'm sure they will.
You think so? I'm sure they will. I really hope we react to play as poor as it's been. Like, as much as I want stability, like, stability is in-house stuff. Like, I like keeping the same guys in the building, but if the guys aren't working out, like, let's give some people some run. Like, we've the past two games, especially if Fox is not playing against Portland, this is the perfect opportunity to give it a little bit of a shot.
Against Portland, I don't mind trying a bunch of weird shit. If that means Ellis is getting actual minutes, if that means even a guy like Kessler Edwards is getting actual minutes, just someone who can maybe guard the perimeter, I'm okay with getting weird. I agree with you. We also, I don't know if you are too tapped into the Stockton Kings, but Jalen Noel is on our Stockton team, and he looks great.
Okay.
He looks fucking great in the G League right now. I don't know why he's not on the roster. He's an NBA quality player.
That's good. We had talked about him prior. We kind of decided he wasn't going to make the cut, but, you know, give it some time. But that's good to know we have that back there. There's two players I want to touch on, two new guys for us. How's the Chris Duarte experience been for you? What do you like? What do you don't like?
I don't think he's played enough. I think I've seen some good things. I think he's a very capable perimeter defender. He looks probably like one of the better ones we have. He's only playing like 17 minutes a game and he's barely shooting. He's averaging like a couple shots a game. I'd like to see him get some run when it's pretty clear if you watch Kings games. When it's going to be a bad Kevin Huerter night or it's going to be a bad Malik Monk night, you can generally tell a couple minutes of the game. He's missed three in a row. You're like, all right. Oof. I'd like to see Duarte just fill his role for the rest of the game just to see what we've gotten him because he's a great defender. And the shooting is streaky, which is, you know, going to be a constant problem. But having a guy who's nice on defense is something we...
We're currently a bottom 10 team on offense and defense, and we've kind of cobbled together a bunch of extremes. Like, this player is pretty good defensively, can't make a shot, and, you know, and whatnot. But I have liked Duarte. Yeah. Duarte shooting 33% from three and from the field.
He's just not shooting very much.
Not at all, no.
Yeah. He's just not involved, which is understandable because he's new and he's a sort of end of the rotation guy. I'd like to see him get more involved. Again, this is something we could do in a game like Portland. Although, I'd say the same thing against Houston, a shitty team like Houston, but no, we lose twice in a row. So, you know, what do I know anymore?
Let me check something real quick about the minutes played. Because what I'm sure we're doing right now is trying to find our guys, like our rhythm.
If you're asking about Duarte's minutes, he's played 26, 14, 7, 26, 15.
Yeah.
How's he supposed to find a groove?
Last season, we had 11 guys averaging 10 or more minutes per game. Same number this season, but obviously last season, we had a bunch of like Terrence Davis, Metu, Edwards kind of in and out. And to have gone 11 deep, because that's basically 11 deep to 10 minutes or more, we're definitely kind of going to establish, you know, an 8-man, 9-man rotation. Where someone's getting cut off. And then I do like that we're trying to figure that out. And maybe that was the plan all along, and Fox's injury kind of helps that process, but also hurts our chance at winning games. How's Vezenkov been? Because Vezenkov's only at 14 minutes. I feel like he should be playing more. Someone's got to lose minutes. If you can't play everyone 20 minutes a game, that's kind of why I want like a 2-for-1 trade or a 3-for-1 trade, where we just are able to kind of cut down on like all the guys who are good enough to be like kind of the 10th or 9th, 10th guy.
Sasha should be playing more often. His minutes has also been kind of strange. He played three pretty solid games back-to-back to get back with the first three games of the year. You know, he scored, 8, 10, 11 points, and then he just didn't get touches for the next three games. He's proved at the very least that the shot is there. He's a good shooter. We got that. And his pick and roll is cool when he can move off the ball. And he's kind of got like that statue defense that some people kind of pull out that can work sometimes, but he's very unathletic.
His shooting numbers are bad. 27% from three. I'm trying to figure out if he but with the sample size being so small, like if he makes four more of those, I think it's like mid or like high 30s, like the 38% or something. Let me do them.
27%. That's 1, 2, 3, 2, 6. That's 7.
Okay, so if he, so he,
he's 6-for-20 right
he's
now.
I was trying to figure out. So he is
6-for-20.
He's 6-for-22, which is 27%. Yeah. If he makes four more of those, that's 10-for-22, and it's 45%. It's almost half, and it's a whole different conversation. It's the knockdown shooter. So I won't get too wrapped up in those numbers.
The first three games, he was, you know, 2-for-5, 2-for-4, 2-for-4. Great games. I'm a little worried about where he fits, because there was some cool lineups with him and McGee, but I don't think you can play him with, you can play him with McGee. I don't think you can play him with Sabonis. And I also don't think you can play him with Harrison Barnes, because you can't have two archaic guys who can't move.
In spurts,
where you can't have three.
In spurts, just hit him, you know, 3 minutes of crazy offense, go Sabonis, Barnes, and Vezenkov, and then kind of flip it around and whatnot. But what I want to mention with the Houston series, or the series, I, you know, I wish basketball did series like baseball. I just think that'd be cool to play the same. It's like, all right, same team 4 times in a row. Let's do this.
Yeah, but then that Warriors series is going to hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you have to do that again.
I think that would build, that just builds rivalries really well, especially because, like, if there's like, you know, oh, I'm off this time, or I want to see this team, it's like, all right, we're going to play them basically like the first week of November is Rockets week or something. But anyways, the threes we were generating were not open. And so for Vezenkov to struggle from three is kind of expected, because we were like, we opened the second half of last night's game with a shot clock violation. Like that's where we were at in terms of generating good offense. Like Sabonis basically would have it at the end, kind of flip it out to some poor guy, some poor bastard to take some heave at the shot clock.
Just had some deja vu about our Rajon Rondo conversation, but it's not just a Vezenkov thing. The whole team is shooting like crap. Outside of Malik Monk, Barnes, and I guess Jordan Ford and Keon Ellis, no one is shooting above 40% from three. Last year, I think we had like, what, 5-6 guys shoot over 40?
I don't know if it's that high, but let's take a look at our next like 10 games or so. We have Portland, hoping that's a win. If it's a loss, we're going to be in a really dark place. We're going to come record part two of this podcast.
It was 5 guys over 40% last year. Wow. Crap.
If we lose that game, we'll do part two of this, and it's going to be just even more upset.
If you thought I was yelling, I'm going to be yelling.
Then OKC in an in-season tournament game, our first of the year. Then against the Cavs, that's a home stretch, 3-game home stretch. Then we go on the road for 6 games. Those games against the Lakers, against the Spurs, Mavericks, back-to-back against the Pelicans and the Timberwolves. Those are some pretty good teams. Gotta admit, that's a scary stretch. I'm guessing there's no way we hit on that road trip without Fox, though. So we'll be back to it. I'm gonna say we'll start that road trip at. I mean, it's gonna be 3-6 or 4-5, which is fine. Like that's fine. So hopefully by November 24th, we are at least 500. But I have to mention November 13th against the Cavs. If this is up by then, me and you are going to be there.
Yeah, we are.
That's
yeah,
true.
We are.
Both of us.
That is going to be fun. It's going to be the first game I've gone to this year. I haven't gone to a home game.
I haven't either.
I've been to went to the game against the Warriors.
Ooh, that's right. You had to do that in Golden State.
Yeah, I've done it twice now. It's 3 times now. I've been in the Evil House watching the Kings play, and it sucks. I hate going there. It's the worst. Not that the arena is like unpleasant. No, it's gorgeous. The arena is gorgeous and it's beautiful. They don't like us over here.
I need to move. It's the crowd here is great. I can't wait for that. Yeah. And the seats are good. Seats are good.
We better light that fucking beam. I haven't seen that shit get lit.
I haven't seen it. Season yet. I haven't.
Because we haven't won at home, right? Did we won in
we beat the
Houston.
Lakers.
Oh,
we beat the Lakers.
Right.
I know they made it fun. Like they made it bigger. It's
right.
Like brighter.
The big beam.
Do we have any more Kings focus talk before we go?
How much do you care about the in-season tournament for the Kings?
I think it's cool. I'm glad we're trying new stuff, and I like the courts. I like our court. Some courts could use some work, but
Miami Heat.
Yeah, there are some that are maybe a little too bright, but they need to work on the jersey contrast, because like the Bulls are playing dark red on dark jerseys. I can't see what's going on. Fine tune that a little bit. I like that it's colorful, but the biggest thing is like to get the in season tournament to stick. It can't just be the name. It can't just be like, hey, this is a tournament game. Like, okay. All right, like if you say so, I like that it's obvious. That's like, whoa, like this is an in-season tournament game. Like, I think I'm Yeah, we have four of those. And so, like, Golden State, like, November 28th, like, when we turn that on, or if we go to that game or something, and it's the court is way different. You're like, oh, yeah, in-season tournament. There's, like, the trophy in the middle. It's a great way to market this new thing, to get the casual fan to understand. Because all of those people that go to these games probably aren't plugged into, like, what Woj is up to and, like, what he's tweeting about. And so they'll sit down and be like, oh, like, it's an in-season tournament. I'm sure, like, the PA announcer says something. It's a great way to make this thing stick.
Right. So the thing is, we're essentially taking this idea from European soccer, where they have these sort of in-season tournaments all the time, except for the thing that makes those cool and makes those special and makes teams want to win them is they just, like, completely separate it from the rest of the regular season. It's the 1 week, you're like, okay, guess what? Wednesday nights, nothing else is going on. It's just the tournament. Or this week, we're just playing this tournament. And it makes it more, I don't know, it makes it more real. If instead of doing them sporadically dropped into the season, it was just like, hey, the week of December 2nd to December 10th, all those games are midseason tournament. And we actually get to see some progression in the groups, like, oh shit, they just eliminated someone as opposed to it being stretched out over a long season, where I don't think we'll care as much. Like, if at some point in, like, mid-November, we're like, oh, the Timberwolves just got eliminated from the tournament. Cool. We won't see anything that matters there until January.
It'd be really tough schedule-wise, but I do like it. You know, I don't mind, like, fucking with the schedule a bit. I personally think we should play, like, less, or we play more division games and maybe play more tournament group games or something. I wish the NBA had rivalries, because, I mean, what's a rivalry right now?
Golden State and Kings. I feel like that's an actual.
Yeah.
That is actually getting to the point where it's an actual rivalry. People are like, hey, sit down, shut up, Warriors Kings.
Yeah, that's a good. I think Boston, I think Miami. We think about them more than they think about us.
you know, you say that, but really? Then they start chanting, like, very specific King stuff at the stadium.
Maybe,
and I'm like, you guys are fucking paying attention over here.
You
guys are watching us here.
I remember my dad said that exact thing to me when we went to a Kings-Lakers game, and, like, Kobe was there, and, like, Pau Gasol and stuff, and we were just booing the crap out of him, and I was like, why are we booing them? He's like, well, it's a rivalry. And he goes, I think we think more about them than they think about us. And I was like, yeah. And then, of course, you know, we got whoops. It's Kobe and Pau Gasol. They crushed us. But that would have been an
The Warriors don't get taken to seven a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Boston Heat is a good one. It's mostly, you know, the Eastern Conference has some good ones. I wish they...
Well, just because there's no good teams. There's, like, four good teams. So all the meaningful playoff games happen between Boston, Philly, and Milwaukee for the last, like, 6 years. Anything meaningful that's happened in the East. Well, the Heat too, I guess.
I wish they leaned more into that, though, and it's just, like, six games a year. It's, like, six regular season games. Like, those Eastern Conference teams play each other a ton. Like, I would be into that just for rivalry's sake. I mean, we're in the toughest division in the league currently.
Without a doubt.
Lakers, Clippers, Suns. The Clippers are a top five team in the league right now. Suns and Lakers have a case for, like, 10th-ish. And who's the other team? And the Warriors.
Warriors.
Like, oh, what's goodness. Going on? Like,
yeah.
You play one of those juggernauts every other day.
Which sucks. I can't stand it. It's that one stretch we played of 15 out of, like, 20 games were against the Warriors. I was so through with it.
13-17, yeah. That was
13-17. Good God.
Just, it was, like, you couldn't escape
those ridiculous stat.
Okay. Any other final King stuff? Where's your panic meter at?
Like a 3.
Okay.
I'm at the level where before this Houston series, I don't think I looked at the trade machine once, and, like, seriously with the Kings. But now I look at it, I've got, like, a massive list of guys, a big Google Doc list of guys who I think might be an interesting trade topic. I didn't have that until last night, but I got manic after that game and started just like, Jericho Sims would look great in purple.
That's a dark place to
be. Which he would.
Yeah, he would. I think I'm at, like, a 5. A 5 is, I wish we had a better record, and I understand things have to change to get better. And that's basically, you know, the fact that I know we need to either move some guys around or some guys need to just not be playing at all. We need to find a rotation, figure this out. Because the Western Conference is so good. that you have to be perfect basically to get that, to get a top six seed is going to be some of the best teams in the league. But
I guess, well, there's one thing I wanted to do, see, just get your idea on it. Mm-hmm. If you had to predict our nine man rotation in 2024, okay. So January, try and pick the nine.
All right, let me see.
I think we're going to have different answers here, but pick nine, not 10.
Okay, nine.
Make it a little harder.
Not 10. I'm going to go Fox, Sabonis, yep. Keegan, yep. Monk. Yep. Fox, Sabonis, Keegan, Monk.
Yeah, totally. Easy.
Barnes, Herder, that's six. McGee.
Uh-huh. I'm still with you. Vezenkov. I'm still with you.
And one more name. Duarte.
Duarte.
Right? I think that's about right. Right. That basically just cuts out Kobe Jones.
What about Trey Lyles?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, because he hasn't played this year.
Yeah, and I totally blanked on him. I'm just looking at who's played so far.
So I guess the debate goes down to Lyles versus Duarte versus Colby Jones, I guess, versus Davion.
I think it's Lyles versus Vezenkov. Like, that's kind of his minutes.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think right. I wanted to believe that Sasha was locked.
I don't think he is. I'm guessing. Well, the thing is, like, I think, yeah, we'll cut. So no Davion, no Colby Jones. That's 30 minutes a game. And then Lyles comes in, takes probably about 15 minutes a game, but half that. And it's like a big man slash forward rotation of Vezenkov, Lyles, and McGee. And like sometimes it's Lyles at the center position, played 60% of his minutes there last season. Sometimes he's at the forward spot because he can space the floor like that. So that's a good exercise. I think I'd go, yeah.
That's probably what I would go with too. I really want Sasha to work. I'm really pulling for this.
Yeah, I think he has some time because it seems to be a while until Lyles is ready. He keeps getting rolled out.
I would hope he's got a decently long leash. He's got some potential. We also made a trade for a guy.
Oh, yeah, we did.
He's already in Stockton, though. We already sent him to Stockton. He was on the team for a day. Filip Petrušev. He's actually kind of good. If you watch some film, you'd be pretty impressed. I had a sort of mock lineup that I thought would be funny because Petrušev is a 6'11" center who has actually played minutes at the one. So I had this hilarious idea for a lineup that was like Petrušev, Trey Lyles, Sabonis, Vezenkov, Len, and just like everyone is above 6'11" just to see what the fuck would happen. It's not a real lineup. It'd be hilarious.
I'm into that idea. If it gets bad enough, but I don't want to get too into the tankathon thing yet, because I mean, do you remember when like we were like 27-50 under like Luke Walton, and what that felt like, just dropping games like crazy, like just hopeless? Although it was a little bit different because we hadn't made the playoffs yet and we were still trying to figure that out, so the atmosphere would be a little bit different. But I won't pretend like that would be a sad existence rooting for bad Kings basketball again. But maybe that's just our natural place in the world, Jack. Maybe that's just how things are meant to be.
Maybe we're meant to look at middling role players and wish that they were our star player.
Hey, that's literally what Harrison Barnes was. That's actually what we did, is we took him.
That's legitimately what we did. We were like, oh man, this guy's going to be a star. No.
Hey, we won that trade though.
Totally.
Zach Randolph
fucking
and Justin Jackson.
Justin Jackson was garbage. Justin Jackson was never good. I don't know how we convinced a team to give us anything of value for Justin Jackson. He's actually still in the fucking league, which is
really
unbelievable. He still keeps getting jobs.
He was on Boston.
Guess what teams he has played on? Because it's a funny list.
Kings, Mavs. I swear he was on Boston for a second. Or is that Stauskas?
He was on Boston for a second. Kings, Mavs.
The Sixers.
And then it gets worse. No?
Clippers? Ooh, not Clippers. I would have recognized that. Justin Jackson. The Grizzlies?
No. What if I told you played on Phoenix last year?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of teams that like had, you know, crazy things happen, some injuries pop in and out, and he may have been signed to a 10-day or something.
Yeah.
That day, good,
he played
good
with
for
the Suns.
Him. Good for him.
The Suns, he got some run with the Bucks, and he got some run with the Thunder.
That was the Mavs were salary dumping for some reason. I forget why. All right. That's all from us. Jack, where can the people find you?
You can find me on TikTok, Jack the Kings Fan, and on Twitter, JackDanKF.
Anywhere else?
That's it. All right. I'm easy to find. It's just my name.
Super easy to find. You can find me at Possible Chairs on TikTok. This podcast all the time. And November 13th in Sacramento.
In Sacramento. With meet and greet.
That's with Jack Dan himself watching the Cavs hopefully lose to our Kings. Thanks for listening. Na, na, na.